Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to the Idea Talks. This is episode 179. 179 episodes, Josh. We got in the bucket here.
That's true. And Groundhog's Day was a surprise to all of us, wasn't it?
It was.
You know, but we're okay here in Vegas because in Vegas, what do we care?
It's just the weather.
It's going to be the weather that it is. Yeah. And we don't have a problem with it.
Clear blue skies or clear blue skies.
But all of our friends out there in Michigan and Ohio, you're freaking out because maybe the winter is going to continue.
It's their choice to live there, though.
Look, we've said many times, you can come to a beautiful place like the state of Nevada where the desert welcomes you and the sun will warm you. So let me tell you, my dear friends, in February, in the icy cold tundra of the Midwest, I love you and I'm thankful to God that God sent you there and that God sent us here. We have a sovereign God and I trust him that he has you in the ice and me in the warmth. And I said warm greetings to each and every one of you. Is that too sarcastic?
No, I think that's completely, just a backhanded compliment. It's
great. Well, I've had a couple friends up there that have invited me to preach up there, and I'll go up there.
It's a trap.
But they invite me in January and February, so I don't think it's an honest invitation. That's the problem.
You're like, can I come in September when the leaves are nice?
Actually, yes. And you know who I'm talking to out there. Yeah. Hey, today we're going to get to the podcast interview in just a moment. But man, hey, I know we just went through the Idea Summit and what an experience. Only a week ago in Dallas, there's so much to discuss about what God accomplished in the Idea Summit 2023. But that is not what I want to talk about as we open up today.
Yeah, because that's a lot.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah, we just passed a bunch and, you know, to God be the glory. It's awesome. So
I want to talk about upcoming events. What's coming up here at the Idea Network?
We had a few things coming up, right? So we have the Idea Night coming up in September. Sometimes we have the opportunity to get together as a large group of pastors and ministry leaders all in one place, whether it's in Las Vegas or in Dallas, like we just finished. Other times, you know, we want to meet in smaller regional groups.
Yeah.
With our local pastors, and that's what Idea Night is for. Maybe for those who can't travel out of state or out of city, and you want to still be able to have fellowships with people from the Idea Network, this is what that event is for.
Yeah, so some of you might be thinking, if you're new to the network, okay, I don't understand. What's the difference between an Idea Summit, an Idea Day, and an Idea Night? Remember, Idea Summits are the every other year national conference, and that's what we just experienced last week. The Idea Days happen every year, and they are regional events. Normally, 150, 200 pastors will show up. The Idea Night, though, this is your opportunity of gathering just in a local setting, not national, not regional, just a local setting, you and 10 to 12 to 15 other pastors. And we give you the entire curriculum. We give you the entire box. We allow you to have a pastor's fellowship in a box. And if you're thinking about registering for September to host your own, all you have to do is email Corey Knopf at engagement@ideanetwork.church. engagement@ideanetwork.church. And we're looking forward to having over 50 different locations this coming September 19th. And so put it in your calendar. And if there's not one registered in your area, we want to register you for the location.
Sign up. You'll love it. It's going to be a great experience. All right. Who do we have with us today? Very special guest.
Today, the episode is called When the Pastor Sees a Therapist. You know, this is a controversial issue for many people, and it's one that is fraught with a lot of insecurity, lack of confidence. Maybe if you have seen a counselor before, like I've seen a counselor, or my wife and I, when we've had troubles, gone and seen a counselor, it's something you don't want to talk about. It's something that we hide under the rug. It's something that we don't really want to share. And today we're going to talk specifically with Paul Elmer, who holds two master's degrees in counseling psychology. For 18 years, he has spent more than 13,000 hours working with hundreds of men and women and couples in his private counseling practice in Portland, Oregon.
He's the author of three books on marriage and relationships and has built a large library of online programs and marriage resources for individuals and couples, which you all can access if you go to securemarriage.com.
Paul and his wife Shannon have been married for over 30 years and together have hosted the Secure Marriage podcast, which you can check out on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or anywhere you find your podcast episodes. With more than 240 episodes, this series provided practical marriage advice for couples in all stages of their relationship. In addition to live presentations and workshops, Paul provides one-on-one leadership training and advertising for ministry leaders, elder boards, and ministry teams. You can find more, again, about Paul and his ministry at paulelmore.com. Paul, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to get to talk to someone in Vegas where the sun is shining, unlike Portland, where it's gloomy and cloudy and depression is just hanging on everybody.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating that you say that. And you being a counselor, how is it that you, I mean, this is a real thing, right? This rainy... Yeah.
Job security. Location, job security. Cool. You just go where everyone is miserable and you got great job security for a long time.
Hey, I get it. I'm a pastor in Sin City. I never run out of business.
Yep. See, there's wisdom there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's begin with this first concept. And because from a 30,000 foot view, we're really interested to know what exactly is the difference between a counselor, a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. Help us understand what these roles mean.
Yeah. So the differences between those are two things. One is education level. The second thing is actually what they do. If you want to think of it like contractors and architects. So a general contractor will get in and actually do the work on your house. So he will fix your plumbing. He'll take care of your electrical. He'll build your actual house. That would be counselors and therapists. Those words are interchangeable. Those are the same skill. A builder or contractor, same kind of thing. And counselors typically are a master's level education. You actually can't be a licensed counselor in any state that I know of unless you have a master's degree and you've completed a certain number of hours. So in Oregon, you go to school, you then do 2,500 clinical hours before they'll give you a piece of paper that says, here, you're licensed and you can practice competently. So those are counselors and therapists. If you want to go to a lot more school, you can now bump up to a psychologist. A psychologist is going to be a doctorate level. So it's actually not a PhD. It's called a PsyD, P-S-Y-D. And most psychologists are doing research or clinical evaluations. So they're not actually walking with people over long periods of time, helping them work through their stuff. They will be called in to do tests and assessments and determine diagnosis of mental illnesses. A lot of psychologists, in fact, I actually trained under one for a short time doing my internship. Court-ordered people would come in who he needed to provide some sort of expertise and say, okay, based upon my experience with them in an hour clinical evaluation, here's a diagnosis I give. He sends a bill, he sends a diagnosis, and then he moves on to the next person. So he's not spending a lot of time actually helping people work through. Now, there are some that do that. I actually trained with a second psychologist, and she meets with clients every day, but that's a doctorate level. Psychiatrist is a medical doctor, an MD. So they actually go to med school. So instead of becoming a proctologist or a general practitioner, they focus on the illness of the brain, of emotional illness, of psychological issues. And so psychiatrists actually have a medical license. They have a medical board who oversees them and they can prescribe medications. They approach mental illnesses and emotional problems, usually through a biological framework. You're feeling bad because your serotonin levels are down or you just got a chemical imbalance. Let's give you some medication and this can change it. And again, that's one tool they have in their toolbox. Counselors, we can't prescribe meds. Psychologists usually can't prescribe meds. Psychiatrists can prescribe meds. There's actually one other thing that you didn't make it on your list, which is a psychiatric nurse practitioner. So that is one more kind of level of a person who specializes in mental illnesses. A psychiatric nurse practitioner is also under that medical umbrella, and they can prescribe meds as well for like antidepressants and anxiety meds and things like that. But those are kind of the major mile markers and differentiators between the four or five levels.
Awesome. That's extremely helpful. And we're primarily talking about counselors and therapists as it relates to ministry leaders in this conversation.
Usually, the only time you'll see a psychiatrist, psychologist, or psychiatric nurse practitioner is when you are in significant mental health issue, stress, distress. You're having a psychotic break. You're having a nervous breakdown. You can't function anymore. And usually at that point, you're also not functioning well in ministry. You're not really able to function anywhere. So yeah, we're going to be talking about counselors and therapists today.
So kind of when some of those mental issues bleed into physical problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do. They do.
Yeah. So for our intents and purposes for the discussion today, what does an emotionally healthy pastor or ministry leader look like in your eyes?
That's a fantastic question. And it's some people think it's hard to describe, but it actually isn't. There's probably two or three main characteristics for an emotionally healthy pastor. It always starts with self-awareness. Can you sit with someone and he can tell you why he does what he does? Can he tell you, I'm aware that I am getting anxious. I'm aware that I'm getting a little intense right now in my conversations. In the marriage stuff we do, we call it PAT, posture, attitude, and tone. Can he recognize, wow, my posture is kind of defensive right now. My attitude is very aggressive. My tone, I mean, I'm snapping at you. I'm self-aware. It's like you can pull the camera back and I can see how I am behaving and how I am affecting you, how this is coming across to you. I wish it wasn't true, but a lot of pastors lack that ability. They just get so wrapped up in what they're doing and how they're communicating and what they're saying that they actually don't pay attention as much, or they're not aware of why they're doing what they're doing, why this experience or this situation causes them to be so angry or so discouraged or so frustrated or so confused, or you know, name an emotion. So that self-awareness piece is going to be my number one thing on what you can look for in a healthy pastor or a healthy ministry.
It's not that you're necessarily never have a struggle emotionally. It's that you're aware of the struggle emotionally.
Yes.
Wow, that's good.
And that doesn't mean that you have to, again, diagnose yourself and, you know, in the middle of the staff meeting going, I'm getting angry right now. Let me tell you about my childhood. Let me tell you why I get so angry. And, you know, this is how my mom, you don't have to back up the emotional truck and download it and dump it on everybody. But you understand within yourself why you do what you do, both the positive and the painful, the positive and the negative things. I wrestle with the thing that got programmed in my brain early on. It was called survival strategy, is never inconvenience people. I hate to inconvenience people. And early in my marriage, before I was aware of how strong of a theme this was in my life, this affected everything between my wife and I. For instance, we would go to the grocery store, and good, healthy people like me are always aware of their surroundings and never want to inconvenience anybody. So before I park my cart in the middle of the aisle, I stop, I look behind me, who's coming, who's in front of me. I pull over, make sure everyone passes so I'm not blocking the lane, I'm not inconveniencing anybody, so I can now reach over and grab my can of pineapple and put it in the cart. And that's how I functioned every day. And then I got married, and I married a woman who parks her cart right in the middle of the aisle and doesn't care about anybody else in front of her or behind her, and makes them wait a whole 7 seconds while she gets her pineapple.
Sheer chaos, right? Sheer chaos.
It was horrible. And it made my skin crawl. It was physically painful to go grocery shopping with her. And so I would, out of the goodness of my heart, I would grab her cart and I'd pull it halfway up the aisle out of the way so everyone else could pass. She'd turn around with a handful of cans going, where's my cart? And we'd have arguments and fights in Winco over, you know, me trying to help other people, but also not aware of how it's affecting her. And it just ran rampant through my relationship until I learned, okay, here's this theme. It's playing out. It's a good thing. I'm trying not to inconvenience people, but I'm also throwing my wife under the bus, and that causes problems. It isn't just with my wife, staff members, with other people I interact with. Am I aware of how my stuff is affecting them? And the people who are less aware of that are the ones who are just operating on autopilot and just don't understand why people are getting hurt behind them, why people are frustrated with them. They don't get it. And that means they lack that empathy. They lack that ability to validate other people's experiences and emotions. So that self-awareness is absolutely essential. Absolutely essential.
So some of our listeners are sitting back and evaluating their own emotional state right now. Am I an emotionally healthy pastor or ministry leader? But others are listening to this podcast and they're evaluating not themselves necessarily, but the ministry in which they find themselves. What characteristics are there of an emotionally healthy ministry?
Yeah, there is. Absolutely. The number one thing in that is what I call psychological safety. That's actually a term that's become more popular now, where psychological safety is people can come into a situation, a staff meeting, a ministry, some sort of experience you're creating, and they're not afraid to bring their authentic selves. They can bring who they are, and that they know that they will be accepted as a human being, even if their ideas may not always be accepted. Even if they try something and it completely fails and craters out, they know they're not going to be threatened. They know that they can push back. They know that they can contribute and that they are valued and appreciated as a human being, that psychological safety. I've actually worked with churches where a leader doesn't provide that. It's kind of this very structured, say again?
I said everybody's on edge or on eggshells when they're talking or in a meeting
all the time because they're not sure what's going to happen if I throw this idea out. Are they going to get berated? Is it going to get teased? Is it going to be talked about behind their backs when they're not in the room? Because when they're in the room with the pastor or somebody else, that's what he's doing to other people. And so it creates this culture where everyone is, like you said, walking on eggshells. They're not comfortable just being themselves. And that is always determined by the leadership. The leader sets the culture. The leader brings in the ability to say, we're going to make this a place where people can be their authentic selves and still be, you know, loved and accepted as human beings, even if your ideas suck.
So what if you find yourself in a situation where the ministry that you find yourself in is genuinely emotionally unhealthy?
Yeah. It depends upon your level of efficacy. So if you are a lower ranked staff member, let's say just an administrative assistant or someone who doesn't have much authority or power to change much about policy, culture, those kind of things, you need to find an advocate. I would wish and hope that would be someone on staff who can hear you. Oftentimes within an entire culture, there isn't even that person there. And so you need to be able to talk to someone outside of the ministry about your experiences and the stress that it's bringing. Again, ministry should not create more stress interpersonally. We all have stress around schedules and time and, you know, just getting the volunteers and making a ministry work, but it shouldn't be threatening who you are as a human being. And if it is, you need to be able to talk to someone outside of that going, okay, I'm in this job, I'm in this ministry, and these things are happening. Number one, tell me, am I having a clear perspective on this? Am I experiencing this accurately? And if you find out, yeah, you're not the only one who's feeling it. There's other people who are kind of on those eggshells as well. Okay, now it's not just me. It's not a personal thing because people bring in their personal stories. Again, based upon what's happened to you in your past, you might be extra sensitive around a certain thing and everyone else just, it doesn't bother them because it's pretty neutral. But for you, it has kind of that tender spot. So you have to be able to determine, is this a personal thing or is this a cultural thing? And once you determine, yes, it's a cultural thing, now you need to start trying to be heard and understood. Oftentimes one voice isn't enough for that. Sometimes you have to get multiple people going, hey, this is what we're understanding in the culture. And if you have leadership who's going, we don't want to hear it, you're all wrong, suck it up, Nancy, and just get your job done. I mean, if that's kind of the response that people are giving you, I'm not so sure that there's a lot you're going to be able to do to change that culture. Now, if you are in a position, elder, deacon, higher up pastor who has the authority to change that, and you're hearing these things or people are coming to you that, and you're going, okay, this might be a thing, I don't know what to do. You always have to get someone outside of your organization who can come in and provide an honest, unbiased feedback as to what they are observing and seeing, because you're just too close to it. And people within the organization probably aren't going to give you the honest feedback because their job's on the line. You don't get that honest feedback from someone who might be in that ministry. So you always have to bring in an external person who has no problem going, yeah, I just sat in that meeting and you were a bully, or you didn't hear anybody, or you kept going in this direction, but half of the room was completely checked out because you just said this thing and it was like setting off an emotional hand grenade in the room and everyone's just kind of reeling back, not sure what to do. And you missed it. Why do you think you missed it? Let's help you figure out how to get more tuned in with what's going on, that self-awareness piece, that culturally awareness piece. So you have to bring someone, and that's what I've had the privilege to do with several organizations and churches, helping elder boards learn how to do that, senior leaders, those kind of things, both in a professional culture, but also pastors who come in and would see me just as a therapist. Because when they get to see me, they're used to being in the position of having everyone listen to them or having to have it all together, and they really can't be honest. But when they're sitting with a counselor, I don't care if you're a pastor. I care if you're a human being. And when they can let that veil down, when they can just be a person, the stuff you end up talking about, it's like, good pastors should never talk about that. And that's why they keep it hidden. That's why they don't want to, because they're afraid their humanity is going to compromise their job. If you think about it, ministry is a really difficult position, job, occupation. If you're a plumber and you have a bad day, you have a bad marriage, you can still fix the pipes pretty easily, right? You can differentiate, you can separate out those tasks. But if you're a pastor and your marriage is falling apart, if you're a pastor and you're struggling with depression, can you tell that to people and people are going, yeah, you can still be a good pastor, because you're the guy who people are supposed to be coming to and you're supposed to be helping them. And so it causes a lot of pastors to hide, to internalize, to not be honest out loud. And as a therapist, I get to be the guy who finally gets to unplug that cork and people get to be honest out loud, and years of stuff usually just keeps pouring out and you get them process all that stuff.
I know we're not really getting into this, but I know and there's a lot to unpack here, and I appreciate your transparency with this. But if you're the one in the position of leadership, whether it's elder, pastor, deacon, whatever, there, what are practical ways that you can create an emotionally healthy environment? Because I think about, like, a lot of pastors or ministry leaders maybe are hearing this. Do you just think about, like, coming into a public environment and being self-deprecating about, like, all of their issues, right? And that equals transparency, and it doesn't. So I guess just maybe a couple before we move on to the next question here, just about, like, practical ways to create an emotionally healthy environment.
Yeah. Offering anonymous feedback. And again, anonymous feedback might be hard if you have a staff of two. So it's really kind of easy to figure out who's the guy who says, yeah, you lead terrible meetings. So there's some practical things that might get in the way, but if you sit down with anybody and you go, listen, I want to understand myself a little bit better, and you are safe, nothing you say is going to affect your job, nothing you're going to say is going to affect your pay scale or your responsibilities or your title, none of that. But in the last week, has there been anything I've done that just didn't sit well, that drove you crazy, that made your job harder? Just give me one. You don't need to back the truck up and download all 50 right now. Let's kind of go slow into this, but give me one. And I'm just going to listen and I'm going to take notes. And then you come back the next week. Is there something I've done this week that made your job harder, that didn't sit well with you, that I'm not aware of, that I'm kind of blind to? Is there something that I just haven't seen? What is that thing? I actually was on staff years ago at another church, and the college pastor was preaching one Sunday, and he told this story. So that's why I feel like I have permission to tell it, and I'm also not going to give any names. But he told the story of the executive pastor came to him one day as the college pastor, and it's one of those where he comes into the office and then closes the door behind him and sits down, and the college pastor knows this is not going to be a great meeting. And this executive pastor says, I come as a friend and I come to wound you. I've never forgotten that phrase. It's such a good phrase. I come as a friend and I come to wound you. Again, enemies stab you in the back, friends stab you in the front. And it was this executive pastor just going, you're not aware of it, but when you interact with people, you're leaving this large swath of emotional damage behind you. You just, your tones and the way you interact with people, it's hurting people. And unless you are become aware of it and start to deal with it, you're not going to have a job here anymore, because it's just causing my job to be a lot harder. And instead of waiting for someone to have to come and tell you that, when you are in the mindset that says, I realize I'm probably doing something, I'd like to know that, and you are preemptive in that, now you're creating psychological safety. Now you're just being honest and saying, I know I don't have everything together. I know I'm not a perfect leader. I know there's things I need to be doing better. What are those? And I'm going to start working on them. And if you say things that, yep, there's that theme, I'm aware of that again, there it is one more time, if I don't know how to deal with that, it might be time to go and talk to somebody else. That would be a counselor, a therapist, or a leadership coach in some way. So probably the difference there is a counselor and therapist tend to work with emotional issues. Therapists or coaches tend to deal with skill set issues. So just bad communication, bad conflict resolution skills, don't know how to lead really well. Coaching tends to deal more with the skill set. Counseling tends to deal with more emotional distress, physical manifestations of that. So again, the ulcers, the bad sleeping at night, or again, childhood themes. I'm always afraid of inconveniencing people, or I hate talking about money. And so our church just doesn't have any cash. Why can't I talk about money? What's going on there? And figuring out what's happening with all of that.
So that's a great point. And that kind of leads us into our last question here, but what does a good counselor look like, and how can somebody find one?
That's a good question.
There's a lot of spectrum out there.
And there's guys listening to this right now who are thinking, I think I need to see somebody. How do I find that guy?
Yeah. I have a general rule of thumb. Most churches either have or should have a good counselor referral list. That is, again, when people come, some member of the church comes to you as a pastor and you recognize this is above my pay grade. I should not be dabbling in whatever issue is here. I need to refer them out. We have vetted, we have talked with, we have interviewed specific counselors in the community, and we have a counselor referral list that we know we have good working relationships with. I was on many of those lists here in Portland. I have lots of good working relationships with pastors in the area when they needed to refer out.
That's a great point, because I think it's a lot, especially for ministry leaders, to admit they need a counselor, and maybe the first one doesn't work out and they're like, it's me, right? And they just give up.
Yeah.
And it's not true. Yeah.
And if a therapist gets offended by that, that's a therapist you absolutely don't want to work with. Their insecurities are coming up with well. It's just part of the game. I always knew that I get one session with people for them to make a decision. Hey, do I like this person? Do they understand me? Do they empathize? Do they listen? Therapists who do more talking than listening, you should not sit with them, because they're not actually working on your stuff. They're working on their stuff through you, but you get to pay them. It's kind of a nice gig for them, where they get to continue working on their personal stuff, but they get paid for it. So you want a counselor who does more listening rather than talking. You want a counselor, the basics, okay, licensed, okay, that's usually a really good thing, that they actually have some good referrals. So again, you've talked with other people, it's like, yeah, they actually helped me. So talk to other people who've actually been through therapy and actually changed. Because if you've been talking to people who's like, yeah, I've been to therapy, I've been with the same counselor for eight years now. Oh, are you feeling better? No, actually, I'm not actually feeling any better. I'm not so sure I would go to that mechanic who has your car for 8 years and it's still not wanting it running right. So you actually want to get referrals from people who have, I was here, he helped me, she helped me, and now I'm here and I feel better. Okay, go talk to that person. So you want to see just practical, yes, they produce change and it actually helps. Probably the last thing is what I call congruence. It's always interesting to me when you go and you see that marriage therapist, but they've been divorced 3 times. Okay, I'm not so sure, again, that you're able to apply the things that you're trying to help me work through. So you want to see some level of congruence. And therapists who are willing to answer your questions. I always have usually one session and then go, hey, at the end of the session, you'll probably think of questions that you didn't think of now. Come back with them. I got people who come back with two or three questions. I had one person come back with about 26 questions, and they were interrogating me. They were wanting to know, you know, my history and if I'd ever dealt with some of these issues that they were kind of working through, and why did I go into counseling and blah, 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 all these things. They really needed to vet me because of their own stuff. And I answered every single one of them. It took us three sessions to do it, but I answered every single one of their questions because that's what they needed. So some therapists are what's called directive. They steer the boat, and then some therapists let the client direct and steer the boat. I tend to be more directive because I want to see things actually get solved. You're coming in with this issue. You want to end up in this place. I want to help guide you through the steps to get to where you want to be. It's like hiring a guide. In Portland, if I hike from Portland to Vegas, I've made that trip many times. I know that route. I know where we need to slow down because we have a hill coming up. We need to save our energy. I know we don't want to go this route because it's going to take us to nowhere. So I'm the guide. I'm going to walk with you through this process, but I'm not carrying your backpack. You get to carry your own stuff. You get to do your own work, but I'm going to still be kind of guiding you through that. Therapists who, hey, what do you want to talk about today? They actually let the client be more directive. And oftentimes I've actually had people tell me, we just don't get anything done because it just feels like we're wandering all over the place and we're not really getting to a particular task. So a counselor who can say, I hear this is where you're at. I can articulate where you're at. This is where you want to be. This is what it looks like when you want to be there. Let me give you the steps. We're going to get there. And then we'll walk this journey together. That's what I would look for in a good therapist.
You know, there are thousands of people out there who will never step into a church, and primarily because they have a lot of baggage from bad church experiences, bad religious experiences, and because they've heard a lot of bad stories. So there's a real prejudice. And as a pastor, I really want to break through and say, not all of the experiences you've heard are reflective of what's going to happen at our church. I think as a pastor, I've heard so many bad stories as it relates to counselors and therapists, I have a bias naturally against it. And so back in September, when my wife and I got into an argument about a particular issue, we normally have a way about compromising. When something becomes extremely important to her, or extremely important to me, we begin to elevate it or de-elevate it based upon a number system. If she says, this is a 9 to me, and we're arguing, I'll say, let's be honest, this is like a 4 to me. Okay, she has her way. This is a 8 to me, and it's a 3 to me. Now, I have a strong opinion about 3s and 8s. So normally we're able to work out that. Only in the last 20 years, there have been a couple times where they're both 10s. And we had one of these experiences in September, and it was in the middle of a staff retreat. And we were going from one meeting to another. It was about a schedule. I won't go into the details, and maybe I'll tell the story on the podcast another time. And my wife and I just were done. Our argument started, our fight began, and it was beginning to permeate the rest of the staff. They could sense something's going on, and it was not great. And while we were alone in our car talking, she looked at me and she said, this is a rare moment for us. I said, yeah, it is. She said, maybe we need to see somebody. And I looked at her and I said, like who? She said, you know, like how we tell people to go to Renewing Life Center and seek a counselor when they have an argument. And I'm like, yeah, but that's what we tell other people to do. And she said, well, maybe we need to see somebody. And this was just in September. And I'm like, oh, geez, no, gosh, okay, fine, book it. And we went and we saw this amazing woman who's seen me privately on a different occasion and then seen Heather several times. Wonderful Christian woman, incredibly, wonderfully licensed, a Christian counselor. And man, did she help us. In two sessions, we're going in for our third very soon. In two sessions, she was able to help us identify the core issue, the root problem, and come to a healthy place. And I got to tell you, as a pastor who had never really seen anybody like that, oh, what a great experience that was for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's counseling is like an art. Yes, it's a science, but it's an art to be able to get two people who are at loggerheads, who are just entrenched in where they're at, and to be able to offer a framework, a context, an environment to actually disarm, to let down all of that defensiveness and to actually get to the core issues and work through it. I call it a sacred space. I have sat, again, 13,000 plus hours with women, men, couples in some of the most horrific of circumstances. It is a sacred space to walk into that mud and that muck and to be able to offer a way out for people. But it is embarrassing. It's hard. Our egos go, we don't want to ask for help. We don't want to have to be vulnerable or exposed to another human being. That's actually the concept of shame. And it goes as far back as Genesis. Hey, we screwed up, Adam. Let's hide. Let's not be seen. I don't want to be exposed before God. And that is the human nature. And when you can overcome that, when you can say, I'm willing to be exposed and seen in front of another human being, I'm going to suggest that that's actually a little taste of heaven. I'll make the argument that that is what heaven is supposed to be. We are completely vulnerable, completely transparent, completely known between us and our Creator and other believers in heaven. Their sin is no longer in the way. We're not embarrassed anymore. And I can be as intimate and as close to everybody else for all eternity. That's going to be heaven. Why not experience a few minutes of that here on earth? Because some people are going to show up at heaven and go, this is so foreign. I didn't even know this could exist. And some people are going to show up and go, I remember this. I can remember a season where we had this with a staff member or a partner, a husband or a wife or a kid, or this was good. I had a little taste of heaven here on earth. And I've been privileged to sit in moments like that with my clients, because I was the first person they ever told any of this stuff to.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the podcast. If you want to connect with Paul Elmer, you can do so by going to paulelmore.com. That's PAULELMORE.com or securemarriage.com and find out more about this awesome resource. Thank you so much again for joining us with the Idea Talks.
Thanks for the invitation. It has been really fun to talk to the both of you.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.